Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Boston Globe's esteemed NBA writer, longtime friend of the show, our friend Gary Washburn. Gary, good morning.
Hey, Damon, how's it going?
Doing great. Always good to catch up with you. And yesterday we saw Jason Tatum explode for 51 points. This was after another game previously that looked kind of dire for the Celtics. Then Tatum exploded in the fourth quarter. Did we see some type of next level of growth from Tatum in this series?
Yeah, I mean, I think especially the last, obviously, two games or five quarters, however you want to call it, just kind of elevating his game to another level. I mean, he's a two-time first-team All-NBA player, which means he's a top-five player in the league. And during this series, he had not played like that. He had struggled, obviously, mightily in Game 6, missing 12 of his first 13 shots, turning it over, looking completely lost out there. Then something clicked with about 4 minutes left, and since then, he has just been unstoppable and played like that first-team All-NBA player. He's been watching guys like Jokic and Devin Booker and other guys have these monster playoff games to carry their teams to victory. And yesterday was his chance, and he took full advantage.
Where do you think that – is it apathy? Where do you think that first chapter of Jason Tatum comes from where he doesn't dominate in series or in games when we know that he's got the capability to do so?
Well, I think last year during the finals, I think there was a fatigue factor. I don't think he was completely healthy. And I think Andrew Wiggins just shut him down, played great defense, was in his jersey. They forced him left to make some difficult moves. There's some times he didn't trust himself and didn't pull up for the mid-range. He's worked on that. And so I also think he struggled from the three-point line. I think one thing Jason tries to do is he tries to get himself going from the three-point line. You know, every great scorer has kind of a method of getting themselves going. Some guys like to, you know, be pass first in the opening parts of the game, you know, get their teammates involved and then kind of ease into it. Other guys attack the rim. Jason tries to knock down that three-pointer. In game 7, his first basket was a dunk. Like, he just attacked the rim, dunked, put the Celtics up 6-2. It was really early, but you could tell that he was just like, listen, I'm getting to the rim today. You know, and then once he got to the rim, that opened up some things, and then the three started falling. He had 6 of them. So, to me, I think it's like his kind of method is a little different in terms of trying to get himself going from the three-point line. But when that three isn't falling, he tends to struggle. And that wasn't the case yesterday. He attacked the rim, used his skill set to get to the rim, get to the free throw line, and score easy points.
Gary Washburn, Boston Globe, joins us after yesterday's Game 7 victory by the Celtics. Tatum, 51 points in the win. They move into the Eastern Conference Finals against the Miami Heat. Once again, the Philadelphia 76ers bow out, and this time yet again after getting 3 of the 4 wins necessary. And Joel Embiid yesterday had a quote, "I can't win alone. Me and James can't win alone." What did you make of Embiid's comment? A lot of people felt like he was pointing the finger and not taking responsibility.
Yeah, I mean, on the flip same interview, he said he's got to be better. They can win a title, but it starts with him. So I do think there is a level of calling out his opponents. I think he looks at the depth of teams like the Boston Celtics or even the new-look Los Angeles Lakers, the Denver Nuggets, guys that are just, like, coming off the bench, the Bruce Browns and the Michael Porter Juniors and the Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. So he looks at that and says, well, where is that for us? And I think that the Sixers have tried. Daryl Morey has tried to build a deeper roster. You know, they got McDaniels from the Charlotte Hornets at the trade deadline, thinking he was going to be kind of a defensive stopper, a 3-and-D guy. He didn't play much at all in the series. And some of their other bench guys are just limited. You know, they got Montrezl Harrell in the offseason. He didn't play in the series. It was like some of those moves didn't work. So maybe he's calling out management, obviously, to say, listen, I need guys around me. I need another all-star, not just James Harden, who, as we know, Damon, has been off and on. You don't know what James you're going to get. He's like a box of chocolates. Like, you just don't know what James is going to show up. And in the last two games of the series, he didn't show up. And I think it's hard on Embiid when he's got to be the guy. You know, Tyrese Maxey, I think, is an emerging player. I think he had a great series. I think he elevated his game and is kind of on the cusp of being an all-star eventually down the road. But the rest of the guys, you're looking at Tobias Harris. Tobias Harris is one of the highest paid guys who doesn't really do much, doesn't really consistently bring it. No pressure on him, even though he signed a max deal, even though the 76ers chose him over Jimmy Butler, which is a move I'm sure they'll regret, and they're regretting now. So I don't blame Embiid for saying it. Maybe management needs to be called out, but they do need a roster upgrade, which leads to whether this whole thing is Doc Rivers' fault or who's to blame for the Sixers losing in the second round again.
Well, what do you think about Doc Rivers' responsibility here? I mean, he won a championship in Boston, as you well know, and yet he's got this host of 3-1 series blown and now 3-2 leads in series, yet another one blown. How much responsibility does Doc have for this?
I think he bears a good amount of responsibility, but there's also roster limitations, right? And I think that if you look at some of the situations Doc's been in, you know, I covered Doc when he was here in Boston. He was beloved in Boston, right? I think it could be a generational thing, Damon. I think Doc's message, his style, might not translate to the Generation Zers, to the younger players. Back then, Pierce, Garnett, Allen, they loved Doc. Perk, you know, Rajon Rondo, they all, you know, wanted to run him through a brick wall for Doc. It worked, okay? In L.A., it didn't work as well, obviously. You know, Blake, DeAndre, and Chris Paul all didn't get along, and they kind of ruined Lob City. Doc took the heat for that, and obviously the 3-1 lead, blown lead in the bubble with, you know, Paul George saying, well, this wasn't really a championship or bust year for us. Like, that was a thing. You're playing with players without any sense of urgency. You know, Paul, after that loss, I was there in the bubble. Paul George said, well, this wasn't, even though him and Kawhi got together and this was supposed, they were, not, you know, the favorite to win the title, he said, this really wasn't a championship or bust season. That reflects, and Doc got fired for that. So now in Philadelphia, he deals with Embiid, who has been injured during every key playoff series of his career, and in the enigmatic, first of all, he dealt with Ben Simmons. Then he deals with James Harden, two guys that you wouldn't bet on to save your life, or let alone anything else. You know, that's a difficult situation to put a coach in, and not Doc's going to go to the Hall of Fame, and he's going to get his flowers, but I don't know if this situation is all it's his fault, but he's got to wear the playoff losses. He's got to wear losing a 3-2 lead. He's got to wear not able to close out game 6 at home with the fans going crazy, Philly ready to knock off Boston, the rivalry. He's got to wear losing that game because that's the game that pretty much lost the series.
Mm. Gary Washburn, Boston Globe NBA writer, joins us this morning here on the show. Over to the Western Conference, what do you think the offseason holds for the Warriors? Do you think it's massive change for that locker room?
Well, that's a good question, Damon. You know, I mean, Curry is still your guy, and he's still playing at an extremely high level. I think what happened in Golden State was they had a plan, right? And it seemed like it was going to work. They're going to take the pick that they eventually chose, James Wiseman. Now, could they have chosen LaMelo Ball? What happens if they choose LaMelo Ball with that pick over James Wiseman? Who knows if you put LaMelo Ball on that roster, how he develops, he becomes the third or fourth Splash Brother. How does that go? But instead they chose James Wiseman. Then they got, you know, a couple of picks in the Minnesota deal to get Kuminga and Moody. And then Jordan Poole develops. So they think, hey, we got a core four to support and eventually take over for Green, Curry, and Thompson. But it hasn't worked out that way. So now they're here. Poole had a terrible playoff series. Has not been the same since the altercation with Draymond Green. Moody doesn't play much. Kuminga probably wants out because he wants a more prominent role. Klay Thompson has not really fully come back from his injury. So I think they have to do the kind of rebuild / reboot thing where they might have to move a veteran or get younger or move one of their younger players to get another young player. Maybe that works, because the question is, can Steve Kerr develop young talent? Because he hasn't really had to during his time in Golden State. They've all kind of been, they were veterans or you know, young veterans when he got there and took over from Mark Jackson, and they all developed into great players. So give him credit for that. But this whole core four thing taking over has failed. They traded Wiseman. Poole is stock as low as can be. Kuminga and Moody really haven't shown what they can do because they haven't had got much of a chance. So now what do you do? And I think that they have to kind of, like, make a tough decision. Okay, Clay, like, your role's going to be reduced. Okay, Draymond, if you pick up your player option, this is it for you in Golden State. Things like that. That's what happens, obviously, when guys turn 30-plus. And, you know, I was there when Danny Ainge traded Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce to the Nets to just rebuild. And then eventually got Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown out of it in the draft. So sometimes these tough decisions have to be made.
Can Steve Kerr develop young talent? Excellent question that you pose there. Gary Washburn joins us from the Boston Globe. Final question about Ja Morant. What's your read on why Ja would do it again and what the potential ramifications would be from his team in the league?
Oh, Damon, I mean, it's a question in professional sports that is grown over the years, as the culture has changed, and that how social media has become such an influence over these young athletes, and how rap music and sports have meshed, and how rappers mostly are they're playing a character. They're not who they are what they rap about. They're not that guy, right? They're rapping. It's mostly an image. Very few rap artists are rapping about their true life. They're rapping about someone in the neighborhood, something that they know, because that's it. When you're a rapper or entertainer, you're putting on a facade. You're not that person. People sing love songs. That doesn't mean they're necessarily in love at that particular time. It's a show. Ja has gotten into this point, I think, in my opinion, where he is trying to fill a role. He is trying to be some of these tough guys. He is trying to be, in Memphis is a tough city, he is trying to relate. And instead of concentrating on being an NBA player, uplifting his franchise, I'm not saying he doesn't give his all on the court. I'm not saying that he's not a great player. But the off-the-court thing, there's a level of immaturity. And in 20 years ago or 30 years ago in the NBA, immaturity was maybe having too many drinks or going out too much and hanging out. It wasn't guns. It wasn't the perception that, hey, I'm a tough guy. It wasn't that much. Nowadays, I think with the change in the culture and the mesh between everybody wants to be a tough guy. You know, we look on the internet, Damon, and there's, you know, fights to Walmart. Everybody wants to show how tough they are. And everybody has an AR-15, unfortunately. And, you know, I just think he's getting caught up in that culture, and it's going to cost him his career. And I think the NBA is the kind of league where when they decide they don't want you, you're gone. Okay, and I'm not saying Ja's at that point, but he's approaching the point where the ownership in Memphis and the league is saying, okay, how much do we want to stake in the future of our league? We've got a lot of young, great players. You got the Tatums, you got the Lucas, and you got the Devin Bookers, and you got all these amazing players in their mid-20s, guys who have, you know, good guys, no drama off the court. And then you've got Ja, who could be in that group, who could be the face of the league when LeBron retires and some of these older guys, you know, Steph retires. And then here's Ja trying to live a life and an image that's not him. So I think that first he has to kind of come to a realization that I'm not that guy. I'm playing a character here. And unfortunately, you can't do that. People will believe that you're that guy. And, you know, in these streets, people don't care about celebrity. So I worry about his health in terms of just someone coming after him or someone. Like, I just worry about, why do you always have a gun? What's going on here? Why are you brandishing it? Like, I think there's a lot of questions. And I think that whole thing a couple months ago when I went to therapy for 8 days and I'm back, that was BS. I mean, that just did, you know, he didn't change. I mean, obviously. I think he just did what people told him to do. Okay, whatever it takes to get me back on the court, I'll do it. He did it. He said it. And just a few months later, he's around a couple, you know, some guys who were just a bad influence. And he needs a reboot. You know, he needs to talk to some people, talk to some older people, talk to some people who have been to where he's been, and hopefully he can change and reform.
Man, that is such a good answer. That is so enlightening on Ja. So I want to follow up with this. It's a little bizarre, not to oversimplify, but it's a little bizarre that Ja seems to come from a stable household as well. I mean, usually we see guys get into trouble because when they were growing up, unstable households, maybe a one-parent situation, perhaps living in poverty around the wrong groups of people. It's interesting, isn't it, that Ja has taken on this persona of tough guy when he came from seemingly a pretty stable upbringing. It's kind of perplexing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's just the image thing, Damon. And I think, I mean, his dad sits courtside, so his father is present in his life. His mom is there in Memphis. So it's not as if he comes from a broken home. And who knows? I'm sure he's had his challenges. I'm sure he's had his issues. I'm sure didn't have the model childhood. I can't speak for his childhood, but his parents are present. Okay, his dad seems to be, you know, a great personality. Okay, he definitely makes himself present at the games, and you know, so it's not as if he came from nothing. And as I said, I just think this whole kind of trap of trying to be something that you're not, trying to give people the impression that you came from nothing. Oh, I've had it so hard. I think that that's the one thing that younger people have to kind of beware of is, you know, be proud of who you are. Do not try to be something. There are people who really have lived that life, really don't have parents, really have parents who were incarcerated, really have parents who were abusive. Like, that's not you, and you shouldn't try to claim that. That's the hard part, that takes a while for younger people to appreciate what their parents sacrificed for them. And in this situation, I think Ja is trying to live an image and trying to, like, dabble with danger, and because that might get him going. And that's something that probably needs therapy.
Tell you, Gary, this was so good. I mean, everything on basketball, but then that stuff on Ja Morant was just elite conversation. Gary Washburn, you could follow him on Twitter, at GWashburnGlobe. Also, read all of his coverage in the Globe about the NBA postseason, not just the Celtics, but everything around the NBA postseason. He's got Court Sense, part of the Boston Globe's array of coverage on the NBA. Gary, I always love our conversations, but this one specifically was really, really great. I really appreciate it today, man. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, Damon. Appreciate it.
Gary Washburn joining us this morning on the show. And those words from Gary about Ja Morant are some of the best, most insightful stuff you will hear about Ja anywhere today. Gary's covered the NBA for a really long time. He's seen the ups and downs of a lot of careers. A lot of young guys come up, a lot of young guys come down. And what he's talking about there is the evolution he's seen and changes of how young players are handling themselves, comparing it to entertainment, hip-hop, etc. I thought that was excellent, excellent stuff. Really, really insightful, illuminating stuff from Gary. So I appreciate those comments very, very much.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.